and qualified favorable reaction from 1,700 Marines relieved of an assignment that brought them no excitement but plenty of trouble, worry, hard work, and red tape. The submarine Nautilus receives a gala harbor welcome as she sails into Portland, England, completing an 8,100-mile, 21-day voyage from Honolulu across the top of the world under the North Pole. For the event, her skipper returned by air from Washington, where he'd been flown immediately after the Nautilus emerged from under the Arctic ice cap. After 96 hours under the ice, the nuclear-powered sub surfaced within 10 miles of a preset target point, an incredible feat of navigation. Adding to the excitement of her arrival was news that another atomic sub, the Skate, had also cruised under the pole, and that the Seawolf, a third, was cruising in the Arctic. But the glory of the first subpolar transit belongs to Commander William Anderson and his 116-man crew, well deserving of the Presidential Unit Citation for pioneering a new sea lane across the top of the world. Girls, 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 everyone lovely and talented. One from nearly every state in the Union, including Alaska. Plus Hawaii, Canada, the District of Columbia, and New York City. 52 entrants narrowed down to 10 before the final talent contest in a series of eliminations that make up the annual Miss America tourney. A treat for the eyes of 17,000 spectators in Atlantic City Convention Hall. The winner, a brunette miss from Mississippi, Mary Ann Mobley. 21-year-old co-ed is 5 feet 5, weighs 114 pounds, and her choice is a popular one. Miss America 1959 receives her crown from last year's queen, Marilyn Vanderber. Marianne will take a year off from college. When she goes back, she'll enjoy a $10,000 scholarship, one of the prerogatives of royalty. Frankfurt Zoo celebrates its 100th birthday, well on in years, but still young at heart, as it shows by moving in whole platoons of zoo newcomers, or new zoo-comers, babies, that is, jungle kittens, affectionate little anteaters, and a baby vicuna, young and innocent, or could be it's a llama, young and ungainly. The llama stays close to mama. Watch it, those legs are complicated. Attaboy. But for a real leg problem, take the young giraffe, which is mostly all legs, and several feet to boot. At the neck, that is. It's sort of a mass official birthday, so a cake is in order. A jumbo slice. For Jumbo. Who else? Unseated Darlene Hart of California and defending champion Althea Gibson take the court for the women's national finals at Forest Hills, New York. Althea serving meets unexpected trouble in the opening games. Breaks the champion service to win the first set. Darling hard serving. Watch Althea bring a deadly accurate lob into play. Miss Hard serving. And the champion turns back the challenge. A brilliant match.
Still to come on Year by Year, Yankee Go Home. Vice President Nixon is attacked by communist agitators in Venezuela when we return.
President Roosevelt demanded it be built, so they chopped through the jungle, blasted away riverbanks, and created a system to lift the world's biggest ships 7 stories high. Take a trip through the Panama Canal on Modern Marvels. Tuesday at 10 Eastern, 11 Pacific on the History Channel.
The stories making front page news in 1958, federal troops enforce public school desegregation in Arkansas. Elvis is inducted into the Army, and the New York Giants and Brooklyn Dodgers go west.
Vice President Nixon arrives in Venezuela, last stop on his South American tour. Awaiting him, another of the well-planned campaigns of harassment that have marred every step of his way. But he and Mrs. Nixon arrive smiling. Despite what has gone before, despite their knowledge, they'll be targets for another communist-sparked onslaught. The cap-calling mob is kept at bay at the airport as the Nixons enter their cars, closed cars for the first time on this trip, a precaution that perhaps saves their lives, for the Caracas outbreak exceeds the darkest expectations. The speed stops for traffic. The mob catches up and attacks the cars with stones and clubs. Mr. and Mrs. Nixon are spat upon and reviled, while an inadequate police guard sits by helplessly. The car itself testifies to the savagery of the mob. At the U.S. Embassy, there is respite. Venezuelan leaders make their apologies, but the tour is cut short. With a heavy cordon of troops screening the route the next day, the Nixons return to the airport and bid farewell to anguished hosts. Maximum security is the order of the day. American Marines had been rushed to nearby Caribbean bases in case Venezuela could not keep order, but the leave-taking was without incident. On arrival at Washington, D.C., quite a different reception awaited. A cheering crowd of nearly 10,000 is on hand. Students, diplomats, government and congressional figures, and in a rare airport appearance, Ike himself. It's a spontaneous acclamation on a scale almost unrivaled for any dignitary in the past. An ovation greets Mr. and Mrs. Nixon, a nonpartisan gesture of sympathy for their ordeal and of appreciation for their courage and bearing as representatives of our country. Following the president's personal welcome, the vice president comments on his tour.
But may I say that, as the president just emphasized, while there were incidents in which a very small, violent, vocal minority were able to enlist the support of some innocent people who were misled as to what U.S. motives really were, while those incidents occurred, I can tell you that from my observations in each one of the countries we visited, that the great majority of the people, the great majority in all walks of life, are friendly to the United States today. And this is true of every one of the countries.
Triumphal procession to the White House follows. Triumphal, for despite the vehemence of leftist attacks, the communist agitators betrayed themselves by their work. Triumphal, for despite red vituperation, the Nixons made many new friends for America. The route is lined with an estimated 100,000 government workers and just plain citizens who cheer the Nixons to the echo. Arrival at the White House marks the end of a turbulent journey that will help set America on a new and truer course in foreign policy. Mile runner Herb Elliott was the track sensation of the year. AAU mile champion and co-holder of John Landy's old mark, he raced in Dublin as part of an all-star field that included Merv Lincoln and Rondolini. It was close up to the last lap when Elliott took the lead. Four runners finished in less than 4 minutes, but the 20-year-old Australian left the field behind. Elliott's new mark, 3:54.5. One of the classic international sports events was revived after 21 years, the America's Cup Yacht Race. President and Mrs. Eisenhower were among the many who witnessed the start off Newport, Rhode Island. Columbia, representing the United States, led the British challenger Scepter by remarkable margins in four races. The cup, symbolic of Anglo-American rivalry, remained in the United States' possession as it has without interruption since 1851, thanks to Columbia, America's gem of the ocean. As the baseball season opened, Ebbets Field was desolate. Across the river, the polo grounds equally barren. But the gloom of New York National League fans was matched by jubilation out west. San Francisco hailed the Giants. Los Angeles turned out to greet the Dodgers. But at season's end, the World Series saw Milwaukee pitted against the Yankees, same as last year, in a diamond spectacular. Bill Scourin's final game homer clinched a 6-2 victory in the seventh game for the Yankees. In the crucial game of the series, the Yankees had demolished a 2-all tie with a 4-run onslaught. The New Yorkers became the first team in 33 years to win the series after trailing 3-1. The conclave of cardinals has reached an agreement. The ancient signal to the world comes from the Sistine Chapel. Habemus Papam. We have a pope, in the traditional phrase of centuries. The throngs who have waited in the square of St. Peter's rejoice with 500,000 Catholics around the world. Elevated to the papacy, Angelo Giuseppe Cardinal Roncalli, shortly before his 77th birthday. Chosen after one of the shortest electoral conclaves in 600 years, he will reign as Pope John the 23rd, the first pontiff to assume the name John since the 14th century. By the time the new head of the church appeared on the balcony of St. Peter's, one of the greatest crowds in Vatican history, over 400,000, jammed the square, with traffic snarled for miles around by those hurrying to be present. One of his first acts as Pope was to deliver an appeal for world peace, this being after his initial appearance, and delivery of the papal benediction to the throngs present to acclaim him. Pope John the 23rd, 262nd in the apostolic succession, Supreme Pontiff of the Church. In London, there is acted out again the dramatic tableau that symbolizes Britain's successful fusion of all the trappings and splendor of an ancient monarchy with a democratic government. The opening of Parliament by the Queen. Elizabeth, accompanied by the Duke of Edinburgh, enters the venerable Hall of Parliament, where she will open the new session of the 300th Parliament, in a ceremony rich in color and tradition, but never before filmed or seen by the public. First to the House of Lords, preceded by Field Marshal Viscount Montgomery, who bears the sword of state. The Queen wears the ruby-studded imperial crown and the robe of Parliament, a radiant figure. Then finally to the chamber, where scarlet-robed peers and formally attired members of Commons in joint session hear the throne speech of the Queen.
Today, for the first time, this ceremony is being watched, not only by those who are present in this chamber, but by many millions of my subjects.
The stalemate in the Taiwan Strait continues, with Quemoy under harassment by on-again, off-again communist artillery fire that has shifted the island's way of life. Much of the population actually lives underground. No one knows just when the intermittent barrage will start, so the prudent islanders stay close to shelter. Beijing has announced that on even-numbered days, it will not shell strategic targets. But in practice, shells have landed on some even-numbered days, while some odd-numbered days have had no gunfire. Confusing, perhaps, but in no way lifting the constant peril to each islander, presented by the mainland gun. West Berlin's regularly scheduled elections, coming in the wake of Khrushchev's demand that the free city be neutralized, turn into a plebiscite, testing the response to Red threats toward this outpost of 2.5 million far behind the Iron Curtain. Campaign rivalry is present, one reason for Chancellor Konrad Adenauer's flying visit. He represents a different party from that of Mayor Willy Brandt, but the text of Christian Democrat Adenauer's message is the same as the socialists. West Berlin will stand fast, and the Bonn Republic will back it to the hilt against Moscow's attempt to force the city under East German control. Four-year-old Mayor Willy Brandt won re-election, his Social Democrats capturing nearly 54% of the vote, up 10% over 1954. Based on a massive turnout at the polls, It represents a solid endorsement of Brandt's staunchly anti-communist leadership. But the crucial figure was the communist ballot, only 2% of the electorate. Down a third from their previous vote, the Reds apparently failed to win even one of the 327 municipal offices. West Berlin, facing its gravest threat to survival in a decade, defies Soviet threats to cast its vote for freedom. On Israel's frontier with Syria, pockmarked and shattered farm buildings offer tangible evidence to support new Israeli claims of Arab aggression in the Hula Valley. Border farmers and shepherds have been reportedly harassed by artillery barrages from Soviet-made guns along an 11-mile sector. More than 600 shells have landed, and many Israelis are leaving the area where border incidents have grown frequent in recent weeks. One shepherd has been killed by Syrian gunfire, three others injured to date. While maintaining communications with the outside has become a major task. Although the Jordan and Gaza Strip borders have been quiet, the Syrian area is the worst in months. United Nations observers are on the scene, the newest focus for trouble on a turbulent frontier. Grandmother was wolf bait in Red Riding Hood's day, and modern grandmoms still have it, as this British beauty contest goes to show. 1,200 contestants were weeded out, and in London, the finalists. Everyone a genuine certified grandmother, vie for the glamour crown. The winner, who wins a £1,000 check as well, is Bertha Griffiths, 47 years old. The contest promoter claims the privilege of giving first congratulations. Who can blame him? Why, Grandma, how pretty you look. Any trouble with the wolves lately?
Still to come on Year by Year, what was new in 1958? Hula hoops encircle the globe.
To sing me his song, so many dreams I kept deep. Me alone in the dark, now you come along and you light up my life. You give me hope to carry on. You
since the St. Vitus dance in the Middle Ages, and with much the same symptoms. From the bourgeois businessman to the bohemian ballerina, the craze hits regardless of class or social status. But looking at it from another viewpoint, the hoop-de-doo has its attractive aspects. In France, too, all the pretty girls have fallen for the hoopla. The swaying rhythmic motion is not only good exercise, it's relaxing, so you tend to stay with it. Relaxing, it's downright hypnotic. Prince Akihito's tradition-shattering engagement to a commoner, Michito Shoda, continues to capture Japanese and the world's attention. It's news when the royal lovebirds return to the tennis courts where Akihito first met Miss Shoda. They were on opposite sides of the net then, and where he courted her, private meetings being forbidden. So now, all Japan beams fondly at this set of mixed doubles. She is the future empress, the first in all recorded Japanese history, not of noble descent. And Akihito, well, even if he bobbles one at the net occasionally, he is still Prince Charming. Bullfighting in Madrid with Generalissimo and Mrs. Franco in the stand. It's a charity festival with some of the greatest matadors in all España taking part. And coming up is one of those rare, exhilarating moments for the non-aficionado who roots for the bull. Luis Miguel Dominguin baits the bull. The bull belts Dominguin. Help arrives pronto. The matador isn't seriously injured, just slightly battered as they pry off El Toro. But neither one is satisfied yet, and they're at it again. This is a bullfight. Looks like the matador has had it. El Toro, he's lo loco. Among the most massive launching pads at Cape Canaveral are those of the Atlas missiles, enormous looming structures over 150 feet high. Their concrete pedestals stand a good two stories. From one of these pads, 18 months ago, the first Atlas blasted off to explode into fragments. Last week, another soared over its full intercontinental range. Now, the most far-reaching feat of all is in the offing. Fueling has gone without a hitch. Every component checks out flawlessly. And the 10-hour countdown goes into its crucial final moments without any substantial delay. The launching area is cleared. The periscope of the control center blockhouse is unsheathed. And in the massive concrete safety dome, the corps of technicians is a muted beehive of activity as the seconds tick away. Of these men, only a handful know the actual course plotted for the Atlas. It's a secret held by 35 men in the entire country. Even the test conductor who actually pushes the firing button knows only that the missile will go its full range. Missile goes aloft in a near-perfect takeoff. Fully loaded to a weight of 122 tons, it hurtles upwards before the enormous thrust of two rocket boosters and the main sustainer engine. Four and a half minutes of powered flight bring it to satellite velocity, 17,000 miles an hour. The missile's own guidance system steers it into orbit, the first time this has been done. With a weight of 8,800 pounds, the Atlas is by far the biggest satellite, more than double the mass of Russia's Sputnik 3. But impressive as is the feat of the Atlas itself and the awesome accuracy of its guidance system, all else is overshadowed by the amazing communication system it carried aloft. The Atlas can receive messages from Earth, record them, and rebroadcast them on a command signal from the ground. A revolutionary new method of space communications was pioneered and given overwhelming dramatic emphasis with the master stroke. The broadcast of President Eisenhower's voice from space. A message received and rebroadcast through all the world. Said the President, through the marvels of scientific advance, my voice is coming to you from a satellite circling in outer space. Through this unique means, I convey to you and to all mankind America's wish for peace on Earth and goodwill toward men everywhere. Here is how the President sounded in his broadcast from the Atlas.
This is the President of the United States speaking. Through the marvels of scientific advance, my voice is coming to you from a satellite circling in outer space. Through this unique means, I convey to you and to all mankind America's wish for peace on Earth and goodwill toward men everywhere.
cheerful images of hula hoopers and Elvis in basic training dominate the newsreels of 1958, but life in the United States wasn't necessarily all that rosy. A serious recession affected the country. Almost 8% of the workforce was unemployed. And the desegregation of public schools was still a major unresolved issue. New York City lost two beloved sports teams when the Dodgers and the Giants headed for the sunnier fields of California. And the space race didn't get off to a particularly good start, as one American rocket after another failed to get off the ground. But things finally started looking up at the end of the year, when a Pioneer rocket traveled 30 times higher than any previous man-made object. Finally, putting a man on the moon seemed within our power. This has been Year by Year. I'm Karen Stone for the History Channel. Thanks for watching.
Little baby face, go die! just a little bit of New Orleans.
Come along with me down the Mississippi. Floating down the river down to New Orleans.
Aww. How about a Patsy Cline song?
Crazy, I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. Crazy, crazy for feeling so blue. For loving you. I can't stop loving you.
Oh, it's useless to say.
Oh, I'll just live my life in dreams of yesterday.
I'm ready.
Everybody's going out and having fun. I'm just a fool for staying home and having none. I can't get over how he set me free.
Reminds me of the good old days of good old television when you could sing along with
Hitch.
You all know it. Okay, now let's all do it all together. Are you ready?
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray.
With it.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You'll never know, dear, how much I love you. Please don't take my sunshine away.
How about a song from Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, huh?
Wish that I was on the rocky top down in the Tennessee hills.
There ain't no smoggy smoke on Rocky Top. Ain't no telephone bills. Rocky Top, you'll always be home sweet home to me. Good old Rocky Top, Rocky Top, Tennessee. Watch the sunrise on the tropic eye. Just remember, darling, all the while you belong to me.
I always want to do that. Thank you.
sharp bites him with his teeth, babe. Scarlet billows start to spread. Oh, the line forms on the right there. Now that Mackie's back in town. Janet, look out.
You blow through here, the music goes down and around, whoa, 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 and it comes out here, oh, it comes out here, yeah, it comes out.
I've been singing Irish songs all my life. Any particular Irish song? Oh, thank you very much. Thank you. It's I'll be here in sunshine or in shadow.
But she's also awesome as a singer. Sing for us, Joanne!
Beg me!
Yeah, come on!
Don't be shy, Joanne.
Okay, okay, Mae West, move over.
Uh-oh.
Give me a nice chord. Put a little something into it. There you go. So you say I've got a lot to learn.
Sleep tight and pleasant dreams to you.
me, just like Christ. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the speed of a prime, like a streak of light, he arrives just in time. Spider-Man, Spider-Man, friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, welcome fame, he's ignored. Action is his reward to him. Life is a great big pain. Wherever there's a hang up, you'll find the Spider-Man.
How it does if anybody really likes this. Now, if you like it, download some more, plus my zip files, Johnny 81 and his zip files. See if you like them. Please send all donations to the Murphy Retirement Fund at 2010 Howell Avenue, Apartment 6 Charlie, Bronx, New York City, 10472. Phone number is 718-597-2967. Thank you kindly.